the cross. To some, this is a symbol of freedom. To some, it's just another piece of jewelry in their jewelry box. To the ancient world, this was neither. It was a gruesome executioner's tool. Crucifixion originated through barbaric cultures. Cultures such as ancient India, Assyria, Scythia. And in some of my reading, it has been said that the Romans did not invent crucifixion, but they perfected it. A death of shame, an agonizing death, a death of many different cruelties. And as central as the cross is to Christianity, in the gospel accounts, we don't really get much description about the physical crucifixion of Jesus. There are many stories throughout the Gospels that contain many different details. And in fact, some of the stories surrounding the crucifixion are handled with some detail. Other stories, the feeding of the 5,000, they counted how many baskets were left over. The second miraculous catch that's at the end of John's Gospel. Someone stayed around and they counted the fish that they caught. There are a lot of details and different stories in the Bible, but when you go to the actual physical crucifixion of Jesus, they just say, he was crucified. Now, we aren't given a lot of details in the Gospels, but we do have other historic books that help to describe for us what a Roman crucifixion would entail. Some of them in very gruesome detail. One of the elements that a lot of us aren't as familiar with ancient practices of crucifixion, one of the things that they would do was they would involve family members. And they would torture and sometimes even kill family members of the crucified right there in front of them while they're hanging on the cross. One historian by the name of Plato records some details of a crucifixion before Jesus' time. And he says about the person being crucified that after himself suffering and seeing his wife and children suffer, many other signal outrages of various kinds is finally crucified. Herodotus, regarded as the father of history, he wrote an account of a man who was crucified on a wooden plank in 5th century B.C., a Grecian Roman area where he was writing about. And he said, as he was dying, they stoned his son in front of him. Now, a historian that some of us might actually recognize, one that was a lot closer to Jesus' time, a historian by the name of Josephus, who wrote the account of the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which was 40 years after the crucifixion. So very much a contemporary with Jesus' time and the practices that went on during Jesus' time with crucifixion. He records and tells a story of how 800 Pharisees were crucified, and they had their wives and children slaughtered in front of them as they hung on the crosses. Now, as I've mentioned, in our gospel stories, they don't give much detail about the crucifixion. You look through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and all of them remain very silent around the physical things that happened during those few hours that Jesus hung on the cross. Some of the few details that we know is we know about some of the people that were present, that were standing near the cross. We know that Jesus' very own mother, Mary, was near the cross of Jesus during his crucifixion. And though there was no indication that she was harmed, no indication that she was tortured in the Gospels, she would have known these stories. She would have known the history of crucifixion. She very well may have been an eyewitness to some of these events that happened during her time that we don't have recorded in history books. I believe she would have known the danger that was involved in being there. The danger that surrounded this horrible punishment. But she was there. even knowing those things. Can you imagine what was going on through Mary's mind? Through her emotions. I mean, just 30-some years before this event, she was approached by an angel before the birth of Jesus, saying that she was going to give birth to a son, and that he will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end. And Mary watched him grow up. She heard his teachings. I'm sure she heard many stories of Jesus' miraculous healings. And in fact, I believe that she herself would have witnessed a number of these. In fact, we know that Mary was actually the catalyst behind one of the first miracles of Jesus, the first recorded miracle we have, public miracle, the turning of water to wine at Cana. It was Mary that went to Jesus. It was Mary's idea for the first public miracle. And now here she is, near the cross of Jesus, at risk herself of severe suffering or maybe even death herself. I want to visit that moment in history. And before we draw our attention to the cross, let's draw our attention to Mary. Mary, who was standing near the cross of Jesus. I believe that it would be safe to say that Mary was hurting. Mary may have been hurting. Though we don't have any indication of any kind of physical torture, she might have been physically hurting from some of the things that might have happened. But I believe that she was definitely hurting with a deep emotional hurt during this event. I believe that she might have been confused. And this was a miracle child. Mary was still a virgin when she gave birth to Jesus. He was promised by God to be great. Had his greatness run its course? Was this it? Was this the end? Is this what the angel meant by forever? That his kingdom would never end? I believe she would have been confused. I believe if we could go and we could look into Mary's eyes, I believe we would see fear. I believe Mary would have felt scared. If nothing had happened to her yet, then what was to stop them in the future? What was to become of her? And not only the physical fear of any kind of torture there, but what about the emotional and mental anguish? I mean, Jesus had become quite a political figure. What was she going to face after all this was over? The jeers, the ridicule. And as mothers think, we know that Jesus had brothers and sisters. These were true children of Mary and Joseph. Mothers, wouldn't you be thinking about your other children? If they were going to involve the whole family in this, what about my other children? We know that Mary spent some time with Jesus and followed Jesus. She was here at the cross. We know her presence after the resurrection. And there would have been a relationship built there with his followers, the disciples of Jesus. They had scattered. What would happen to them when they were found? She would have had good reason to be scared. I believe Mary would have felt alone. I mean, even though she was in a crowd of people, and I think a lot of us understand this feeling, how this can happen. Even though she was in a crowd of people, I believe she felt alone because who else could relate to her? Who could understand what Mary was going through? Mary was going through something that was completely unique to her. No one else was going through what Mary was going through that day. Who else standing near the cross of Jesus would have remembered little toddler Jesus taking his first steps? Who standing there near the cross of Jesus would have remembered that night when the shepherds came and made a surprise visit while Jesus laid in a manger, describing that they too had seen an angel? And they followed a star to that place? Who could she talk to? She was surrounded by a crowd of people, but I believe she was really feeling alone. I also believe that Mary felt helpless. You know, mothers operate a different way, don't they? I mean, men, fathers, our child falls down, they skin their knee, and I get up, right? Are you with me, fathers? Come on, quit your crying, get up. That's not that bad. It's all right. Come on, we'll sew it back on later. Mothers are a different type. And when dad's saying, oh, come on, brush it off, mom is already standing there with a tube of Neosporin and a Sesame Street Band-Aid. I think there's something innate about mothers that says that if there's something broken about my child, I gotta fix it. And there Mary was, standing near the cross of Jesus, watching her child breaking. And she couldn't fix it. There was not a thing she could do. I believe she felt helpless. You know, as we're revisiting this moment in history, and this kaleidoscope of feelings that were going on inside of Mary, pan with me now up to the cross, up to Jesus. I mean, Jesus, he had problems of his own. He was tired. He had been through a whole night of trials. We were told that prior to the night of trials, that the spiritual anguish that went into this evening as he was praying in the garden, a night of spiritual warfare, knowing what was coming. What about Jesus's? What was he going through emotionally as he washed the feet of Judas, his betrayer? He was tired. He had been physically beaten, flogged, and tortured. And that wasn't the hardest part of all of this. I think a lot of us here have had some sort of injury where we understand pain. Some of us understand severe pain, an emergency where you were rushed to the hospital. Maybe you had broken something, or maybe you were in a car wreck, or maybe you had your appendix burst. I think we know something about physical pain, so when we hear stories about the cross and the physical pain that he would have been going through, we can relate a little bit, but this whole bit of carrying the world's sins, I don't think we can understand the intensity of that kind of suffering. I mean, Jesus, he had the weight of the world's sins on his shoulders. And there's not a one of us in this room that could even come close to imagining what that kind of suffering would have been like. Yet in all of this, in the pain and the shame of the cross, Jesus looks down from the cross and he sees his mother. And he uses some of his last words to take care of her. Famous last words. This is our series. This is our Easter series. Famous last words. For the next 7 weeks, we're going to be looking at the last statements that Jesus made from the cross. In the Gospels, we have 7 statements that are recorded that Jesus made as he was dying on the cross. And so what we're doing is we're taking a statement each week and we're going to examine it and we're going to look at that and see what we can learn from it and how we can reflect on these last words of Jesus in his earthly body. Famous last words. Our statement today is actually the second statement he makes. The first statement we're going to deal with next week, and then after that they're in chronological order. Let's go on and look at that statement. It's in the book of John. If you open your Bibles to the New Testament, you'll probably know you're in the New Testament because you'll see names that actually look familiar. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then John. It's the fourth book in your New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Go on to John chapter 19. Let's read this account. It says, near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, so that would have been Jesus' earthly aunt, Mary, the wife of Cleopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, this is understood to be John, the author of the book. And actually, it doesn't sound like a humble way of referring to himself, but it was. And it was, as you look at that scholastically, it's really ingenious, because who did Jesus love? I mean, the disciple whom Jesus loved, isn't that all of us? And so he was putting himself in the crowd with every one of us. So John, standing nearby, the disciple whom he loved, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, the disciple took her into his home. See, in the midst of all this, in the midst of all the pain and being tired and his suffering and his spiritual anguish as he bore the sins of the world on his shoulders, he was going through all that, and yet he was concerned with the safety and well-being of his mother. As firstborn, there was a certain responsibility here. I mean, we haven't seen Joseph show up in the Gospels for some time. There's good reason to believe that he would have passed on at this point, and that Mary very possibly would have been a widow. He's not at the cross. She's there alone. And so as firstborn, it would have been Jesus' responsibility to take care of her and to make sure that she was taken care of. And so Jesus says to his mother, "Here is your son," referring to John. And then he says to John, "Here is your mother." Now, as we pan from Jesus, let's move to John. John, this disciple who was standing there, the only disciple that we have recorded that was near the cross of Jesus during his crucifixion. And we're told that from that time on, this disciple took her into his home. John took her into his home. He cared for her as if she were his very own mother. He gave her shelter. He provided for her. That's a very intimate gesture. John simply obeyed Jesus. "Here's your mother." Okay, she's my mother now. There wasn't an argument that we've got recorded in Scripture. John didn't start coming up with excuses. "Well, Jesus, I just don't have the room. I don't have the finances. It's not something that's really feasible for me. I mean, I love her. She's a nice lady and all that, but I've got a life I need to leave. I've got my own things I've got going on." We don't see any of that. And I don't believe any of us would expect that to have happened. Jesus says, "Take care of my mom." John simply obeys Jesus. He took her in and cared for her. This hurting, confused, scared, alone, and helpless woman. You know, we come across a lot of Marys in our lifetime. Now, I'm not talking about the Virgin Mary, or not the image of the Virgin Mary on a piece of toast being sold on eBay. I'm not saying that we're going to come across people and then all of a sudden you walk past someone and they're in first century garb, you know, with sandals, walking by and say, "Oh, that must be what he's talking about." I'm talking about regular people, but we don't notice them. Some of us don't even know that they're there, but I guarantee you they are. In fact, you are surrounded by people who are just like Mary. In your bulletins, beside that number 4, if you're taking notes, there's a big line there. That big line is for your name. So if I were filling out a bulletin, and I'll do this with you, I'll fill mine out on the screen, I would put Dusty there. You put your name in that line, because what we need to do is we need to have a conversation with ourselves. We need to confront ourselves on what we've just heard, this story, this account of Jesus, one of Jesus' last words. We need to confront ourselves, because if I'm looking at myself, I have to tell myself, I say, Dusty encounters people like Mary every day. You encounter people like Mary every day. How so? Well, look at this list. Look at this list of how Mary probably felt. We encounter people like that every day, people who are hurting, people who are confused, people who are scared, people who are alone, people who are helpless, especially especially during these times right now. I've heard countless stories of people who were involved in a company where everyone took a pay cut in order to keep everyone a part of that company. Other companies are letting people go, and we've got people that are right here in our midst that have been looking and looking and looking for a job. They've been beating the bushes and sending out resumes, but no one's hiring right now because of the way things are. We've got others. I've heard other stories about some of our older folks who have got a lot of money that was wisely invested. They were being good stewards of their money, and they invested money to live on as they retired. Last year, in 1 year alone, they lost tens of thousands of dollars because of this economy. You don't think those are people who feel helpless? Who feel alone and feel like no one else can understand what they're going through? Who are confused, hurting, scared? But I don't think we see them because I think we're so consumed with our own problems that we miss the Marys in our life. We miss those who are hurting. We have problems of our own, but let me remind you that Jesus was suffering greatly on that cross. He was bearing the sins of the world on his shoulders, and yet he was concerned for his hurting, confused, scared, alone, and helpless mother. See, I need to confront myself on this. I believe that every one of us need to confront ourselves. We need to say, see, Dusty has problems of his own. I do. Pressing or important matters through the day, yet he should still share Jesus' concern for others. Now, if you're a lady with us this morning, you're going to have to do some adjustment on those pronouns. And as you're taking that personally, if your name's Jane, Jane has problems of her own. Pressing or important matters through the day, yet she should still share Jesus' concern for others. We're so consumed with our own problems that we miss all of these opportunities for ministry around us. We miss the confused. We miss the hurting. We overlook the scared. We pass up the alone. We fail to help the helpless. But Jesus, even to the day of his death on the cross, managed to find ways to love and care for people. We see that in this statement. And we can expand this a little bit beyond blood relation. Jesus was the Son of God. Mary was his earthly mother. As we relate, we have earthly mothers. But as we expand it past that, Jesus was caught and he was quoted in Matthew saying, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." So I believe we can take this principle and apply it to our church family. Who's my mother? That's all you ladies out here. Who are my brothers? Who are my sisters? It's this family here. And we know we have hurting among us. We know we have scared people among us. We know we have people that feel alone, that are confused, that feel helpless, right here in our family. They need your love. They need your support. They need your attention. But I don't want to stop just here. Let's expand this further. We know that Jesus had other brothers and sisters, and these brothers and sisters were actual biological siblings that came from Mary and Joseph. Some of them are listed by name, and we know that one of them's names was James. James did not believe in Jesus during his ministry. And I don't know at what point that changed, but James ended up, after the resurrection, becoming just a very important part of the early church, a church leader. James, the brother of Jesus. When did that switch? What happened? We know that Jesus appeared to him after the resurrection. It's mentioned, I believe it's 1 Corinthians 15. He even wrote a book in our New Testament, and the book is called James. And in that book, he states that religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows. in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. See, I believe James was affected by this event at the foot of the cross. James was a brother. That was his blood mother. And yet Jesus from the cross tells John to take care of his mother. And he took her into his house. What kind of witness was that from John? Taking this woman who was not, that's a whole other argument, could have been some blood relation. There could have been some cousin-oriented things there. But not a direct relative as much as James would have been. Took her into his house. And later James writes this and writes that this is what real religion is. It's taking in these people that are helpless, these people that are hurting, these people that are confused, and it's taking them in. That's what real religion is, according to James. And he brings up orphans and widows because in their time, these would have been the most helpless people in their group, in their people group. Widows, if you were a widow and your children either didn't care for you or you didn't have children, you were destined for poverty. You were destined for an awful life. Orphans, if you're a baby, an infant, a young child, and no parent to take care of you, what chance did you have? So James says these are the most needy of the needy. These are the most hurting of the hurting. These are the most helpless of the helpless. And when you help these people, that's true religion. So let's expand this outside of this building and outside these walls. Because in your workplace, in the aisles of your supermarket, you pass people who are like Mary every day. You brush shoulders with them and you don't even know it because you're so consumed about yourself. And these people are hurting and they're confused. They're alone. They're scared. And we need to confront ourselves on this subject. And as we're looking at ourselves, we need to say to ourselves, I need to say Dusty needs to simply obey and take these people in. You need to say that to yourself. Because this is what true religion is. To love and care. And these people, they might have had a lot of similarities to Mary that day. But there's a good chance that they had one thing that was very, very different from Mary that day. See, in John's description, in John chapter 19, we know the location of Mary. She was near the cross of Jesus. These people that you brush shoulders with, these hurting, these confused, these alone, these scared, these helpless people outside these walls, there's a very good chance that they're not near the cross of Jesus. They don't have the hope that you have. Who's going to take it to them? Who's going to share the hope that you've got? And why would they listen to your message of hope if they don't have a tangible reason to do so? If you're not loving them, if you're not caring for them. John gave a tangible witness of what love was. He took her into his home. We need to start taking these people in. I think we do a wonderful job here in our church. In fact, we've got a lot of guests that come here and they say, you know, it feels so warm and so comfortable to be in this church. And I say, yay, church. But is that all we're going to do? As I described earlier, it's a time for Miami Town Church of Christ to take what's good and make it better. Not for us, but for God. Amen. We've got warmth in here. When people come in through those doors, they feel warmly loved. What about the people that don't come through those doors? They need it. We need to break out of these walls and take what is in here, the warmth, the love that we have, and we need to take it outside these walls. Through this next 7 weeks, we have 7 weeks from today as Easter. I'm going to have some projects for you guys. We're going to have some homework. This week it's going to be very simple. I want you to identify the Marys in your life. Look for them. Intentionally find them. And once you do, you've got two things this week that you need to do. The first thing, you need to pray for them twice a day. Once in the morning and once at night. Pray earnestly for them. They're hurting. They're scared. They're alone. And maybe you don't know their whole story, but if you see enough to know that that's where they are, you need to be praying for them. And I want you to do something else, and this is very easy, very simple, and I don't want you to overdo this either. I want you to find at least one or two times this week where you can have a casual, general just brushing with them, a conversation with them. Nothing deep, nothing personal, just very general, casual conversation with them. If you see them going to the break room and they're buying a pop and they're going to sit down and take five, stop what you're doing. Happen to be there when they're there. And just get to know their name. Get to know their children. Very general stuff. That's your assignment this week, because, church, we need to do more than what we're doing. We need to start reaching out of these walls. And as you are praying for that person, as you are looking at that person, as you are sitting in front of that person sharing a very general conversation with them, I want these words of Jesus that he spoke to John to echo in your ears. I want you to hear Jesus speak to you from the cross. I want you to hear him say, "This is your brother. This is your sister." And whether or not they know it or not, this is a future Christian.